Good morning. Time to get up and go to work.
The Power Pack Morning Zoo. Are you kidding me?
Fire!
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Good morning and welcome.
Dan Mickley.
Oh my God, he's from Chicago. That's amazing.
Vinnie Marotta.
Oh my, Vinnie. Who's better than Vinnie?
Sarah Cazell. And Jerry Carlin. It can only be Jerry. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Mickley and Marotta mornings.
Shout out to Dan Mickley, my boy. Him and Vince look tense. Okay.
Good morning, happy Monday, Valley sports fans. We have reverted back in time to the bad old days when the Suns were done before the month of May.
Here we are.
Here we go. Here we are and here we go. Who would have thought this was going to be the case, right?
Well,
I mean, if you go back to the beginning of the season, date back to there.
Doing a lot of pondering. They gave us a lot of indication that this was very much possible.
Well,
the last indication of the regular season was certainly not this, but here we are with a long baseball season.
Yeah, right? Is it a football season yet? It's
baseball season seeming longer by the day.
Right. Yeah. Let's go, Kyler.
If you exclude the Cardinals draft, which by all accounts they did great, this is one of the worst several week stretches in Arizona sports in quite a while between the Coyotes, between the D-backs injuries and underachieving, and of course the Suns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I personally would like to thank the Suns for ruining my vacation plans. As you know, if you saw my pictures from the cruise that I went on with friends, I'm wearing jackets very frequently because it was cold and rainy and gross. And it was because we had to go before the playoffs because we all anticipated a long playoff run. So thanks, Suns. I could be getting on a ship today.
You could be.
Well, they played like ship last night.
They sure did.
And that
actually,
ship
last night was the best game they had.
Ship has sailed. Right. The ship has hit the fan. All right, Jared, start the show. Let's get it going.
The splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
It is over. Just 8 days after it began, the Phoenix Suns postseason comes to a crashing halt last night at Footprint Center, a 122-116 loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Suns played by far their best game of the series. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it still served as a stark reminder of just how far this team was from being championship caliber or even being close to the same level as the T-Wolves. Anthony Edwards scored 31 of his 40 points in the second half to lead the Timberwolves to their first playoff series win in 20 years. Suns led after the first, second, and third quarters but couldn't match Minnesota in the fourth. Royce O'Neal's three tied the score at 107 apiece with 4:32 to go, but Edwards answered with a three 19 seconds later. Suns could not get over the hump. Karl Anthony Towns added 28 points for Minnesota. Devin Booker at 49. Kevin Durant 33 in the loss for Phoenix. Suns swept in a four-game series for the first time. A best-of-seven series for the first time since 1989.
Oof.
Yeah, Minnesota.
Oof. The first time a Minnesota sports team in any sport has ever swept a team in four games.
That is true, too. Minnesota moves on to face the winner of the Lakers-Nuggets series. In the fourth quarter of that game, Minnesota head coach Chris Finch was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Mike Conley dribbling down court along the left sideline, fouled by Devin Booker. Both players spilled over the sideline and right into Finch, who went down in a heap after the collision with Conley. Finch stayed on the court for a couple minutes before being helped to the locker room. Reports say he likely suffered a torn patellar tendon in his right knee, and he'll need surgery before the next round of the playoffs.
He must have gotten his leg caught up in like a chair or so. I can't even imagine
that
snapped.
I watched the replay a couple times, and it looked like it was just Conley hitting it, and it just bent weird. And it was, he was right in the first row. Yeah. But man, you want to talk about unfortunate. I'm actually surprised that doesn't happen more. But the proximity of fans and coaches and the scorers table right there. Yesterday in the NBA, Jalen Brunson poured in a franchise record 47 points. And added 10 assists, the Knicks top Philadelphia 97-92. They take a 3-1 series lead in that Eastern Conference best of seven. The Clippers squandered all of an early 31-point lead, but then rallied and hung on to beat Dallas 116-111 to even their first-round series at 2-2. Paul George and James Harden each had 33 for L.A. Man, that was some entertaining basketball down the stretch.
A crazy game.
Yes. The Indiana Pacers moved closer to a first-round playoff win with a 126-113 victory over the shorthanded Milwaukee Bucks. Miles Turner, 7 three-pointers, 29 points for the Pacers, who hit 22 three-pointers as a team. Bucks played without Giannis and without Dame, and mostly without Bobby Portis, who thought it would be a good idea to get ejected 7 minutes into the game. Tonight on the playoff schedule, 3 games on tap. Miami hosting Boston. Game 4 at 4:30 on TNT. Celtics lead that series 2-1. Then at 5:30, it's Oklahoma City trying to finish off a sweep of the Pelicans. That game is on NBA TV. And the Lakers trying to stave off elimination for a second straight game. They're back in Denver for Game 5 against the Nuggets. That game tips off at 7. Oklahoma City coach Mark Daigneault was named the NBA's Coach of the Year in a vote that was not close at all. Daigneault received 89 of 99 first-place votes ahead of Orlando's Jamal Mosley and Chris Finch of Minnesota. Away from basketball, the Arizona Cardinals had a very busy weekend at the NFL Draft, adding 12 new players after all was said and done. Monty Austin Fort and Company selected 6 offensive players over the 3 days of the draft, including, of course, wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. with the 4th overall selection on Thursday. They also got 6 new defensive players, including Missouri edge Darius Robinson, Rutgers corner Max Melton, and Texas Tech safety Dadrian Taylor Demerson, otherwise known as Rabbit.
Good nickname.
Yeah, very
right?
Good nickname.
Not as good as Kool-Aid.
No.
Or Pork Chop.
Or Pork Chop. Yeah.
But Rabbit's pretty good.
Rabbit's not bad.
Ketel Marte's RBI double in the 8th inning scored Kevin Newman, breaking a 2-2 tie as the Diamondbacks won their series finale 3-2 over the Mariners at T-Mobile Park. Starting pitcher Brandon Pfaadt was
outstanding. He was outstanding.
He allowed just 2 runs over 6 innings, struck out a career-high 11 before handing off to the sturdy Diamondbacks bullpen trio of Joe Mantiply, Ryan Thompson, and the Gink.
The Gink was pretty good yesterday.
He was very good. Retired the last 20 hitters they faced combined?
Yeah,
crazy.
I agree. Brandon Pfaadt was fantastic. They were going up against a really, really good pitcher, and I thought, okay, this is going to be another one of these losses, and they found a way to win the game. So hang in there, D-backs.
They return home.
We're cheering for you.
After a 4-6 road trip to face the Dodgers for the first time this season at Chase Field. Tommy Henry on the mound for Arizona against L.A. lefty James Paxton. First pitch, 6:40. It'll be here on Arizona Sports on 98.7 with pregame coverage starting at 6 o'clock. One of women's basketball's all-time greats is calling it a career. Candace Parker announced her retirement on Sunday via social media. 38-year-old Parker won the WNBA's Rookie of the Year and MVP awards in 2008. Part of 3 WNBA champions, made 7 All-Star appearances in her 16-year pro career. There you go. There's your splash for Monday, April 29th, 2024. And we'll start with a question, Vic.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about?
Yeah.
What does he want to talk about? Yeah. Or what do you have to talk about?
Yeah. The Suns' grand experiment ends in failure with a capital F. They get swept by the T-Wolves. We will dive in headfirst next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on this Monday, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
The Phoenix Suns season is over. A sweep by the Timberwolves, and now we look back at maybe the most disappointing season ever and look ahead to all the limited options to fix it. It's today at 2 on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Disappointing. I mean, there's no other way to put it. There's no worse professional feeling in the world than getting swept in NBA playoffs. I've never been a part of it. I feel pretty low right now. I want to speak to our fans directly and say, I share your passion. I'm as disappointed as y'all are. Okay, I'll share that with you all. But we got beat by a better team this year, and we put this team together with the mindset that We have a 3 to 5 year window, you know, that every year we're going to have a chance to, we have a team that has the firepower to compete for it. But, you know, this league is loaded with firepower. We got a talented group. So do the Timberwolves. So do every team in the top 10 teams in the Western Conference. They're loaded with talent as well. So, you know, we got to evaluate and figure out ways we can get better. And, you know, just process this tough series loss.
Frank Vogel last night after the Suns go down by 6 in Game 4, and they are done. 4 and out for the Phoenix Suns. Mm. Swept for the first time in 35 years in a playoff series in a best of 7. And this, again, as I said in the splash, man, this was windshield and bug.
Yeah,
basically.
It was. Yeah. So I think the disappointment crested Friday night and Saturday morning. I think as far as elimination games go, at least this was not an embarrassment. At least you got something really good from Devin Booker. At least you got maybe your money's worth if you had a ticket to the game. But when you zoom out and you look at the whole thing, what a freaking disaster. To come out at the beginning of the year as the owner of this team and say, this is the best team in basketball. You struggle to win 49 games. You can't get your chemistry right. You can't get your vibe right. You've got a head coach right now that is teetering between fired and scapegoat. You've got a team that deflects all accountability. You've got a vacuum at leadership. And you've got very little flexibility moving forward. And the West is only getting tougher and tougher around you.
Yeah, it's bleak.
It's very bleak, and it's really pathetic. It really is.
Look, we're going to hit pretty much every aspect of last night's game, this series, and this season, not only today, but in the upcoming days, because it deserves that kind of examination. But let's start with the aftermath of last night's game. Suns lose. They played their best game of the series, whatever that says to you. You take it for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. They showed up and they competed, mostly. It was basically 2-on-8 last night.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
I think the Suns had two guys show up and played well, and I think even Kevin Durant faded down the stretch. But Minnesota was top to bottom better. But right after that game, there's an article from Shams Charania and Doug Haller, who tag-teamed it on The Athletic. They had this ready to go.
Uh-huh.
This was a story that just shines a light on the season-long dysfunction of the Phoenix Suns, to the point where the anecdote at the very beginning is, after the Suns, in their final regular season home game, that ugly performance they put forth against the Clippers on Fan Appreciation Night, where they fell behind 35-4, the next day... Mm-hmm. Or that night, Frank Vogel lit into them. The next day, because they had a back-to-back, they played in L.A. the next night, at shoot-around, he's laying into them. And the Suns are rolling their eyes at him, mm-hmm. because he didn't do anything resembling that basically the whole season.
Yeah.
Just let it go. And that's kind of the starting point of where this relationship between head coach Indeed. And team is right now. And Frank Vogel, before yesterday's game, I got to find the pregame cut. Here it is. The first question he was asked in his pregame availability. Are you confident you'll be back next year?
And to set it up just a little more expansively, what Frank Vogel's been doing very recently is using the word, this is our first year, this is our first year, implying to everyone who would listen to him that this is just getting started.
Yes.
That we've got a longer window than 1 year. So continue.
Coach, obviously, here of late, you've been talking about, year one, building, year one, learning each other. How confident that you'll get a year two to be able to build off of that?
Very.
Okay.
I got the full support of Matt Ishbia.
Okay. So, okay.
Now, let's zoom out again this weekend. Fire Vogel chants during game 3 on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, in the introductions before the game, the crowd was way in. I didn't expect that much energy early in the game. I went through the starting lineups for the Suns, and every player that I introduced got a rousing ovation. And then I introduced the head coach, and there were audible boos. And it wasn't mixed. It went from elation to get this guy out of here.
Mm.
So I'm wondering, Bick, and again, this is something we're going to examine for days. I'm wondering, can Matt Ishbia, if he does have full confidence in Frank Vogel, bring him back when the fan base is this far gone on?
No. Listen, and so it was sitting in that pregame press conference with Frank Vogel, it wasn't just the words that he said. It was the way in which he said them. He said them very confidently with almost a little half smile on his face. And then he dropped Matt Ishbia's name as in, no, Matt Ishbia told me I'm his guy. So if he does get fired, now he puts Matt Ishbia in this place of having to answer questions. Like, did you tell him? Did he think you had full support? So for him to go that far pregame, a lot of us thought, that's interesting. Because if you're going to keep Frank Vogel, the only way you can keep Frank Vogel is you got to drop a bomb on the whole team. You got to blow the, metaphorically speaking, you got to drop a bomb on this whole thing. You have to. Yeah. Because these guys don't respect the head coach. If you're going to bring back the big three, and I don't know how they can't. I'm not sure they want to. I don't know what options they have. You have to get a different leader in here. I agree with everything, the criticisms of Frank Vogel. This team has been a mess. He clearly has no control over this group. He doesn't have the respect of the group. Friday night in game three, there was a timeout, and the timeout was about three quarters over, and Frank Vogel was talking, and he was trying to get this team rally up. Devin Booker stood up and walked out of the huddle and just went down to the other end line in the middle of the timeout. Yesterday, Bradley Beal's coming off the floor. Frank Vogel puts out his hand for a hand slap. Bradley Beal slaps his hand away. This is not healthy. And it doesn't speak well of the coach, but I got news for you. It doesn't speak well about the players either.
Oh, no. But everybody's got to wear this. Everybody does.
Even if you take away the, do they respect him? Has he lost the team? Even if you take that away, he appears that he was not the right fit for this roster anyway.
And you mentioned
the top guys on the roster are all coming back.
Yeah, I mean, coaching a team of this amount of star power, it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
You got to thread the needle to find the right guy.
Mm-hmm.
They thought they threaded the needle because they relied on Frank Vogel's experience in Los Angeles in the bubble season where he was able. And Frank Vogel, you remember it? We were sitting there at Media Day.
Mm-hmm.
He had his chest puffed out. He's like, I've got experience in this. I know what I'm doing.
I know what I'm doing when it comes to dealing with stars. Could anything have been less accurate than that statement?
Every group of stars, every constellation is different.
That's true. It is true.
This constellation and this coach did not hook up this year.
No. So this is going to be something that if you are as a basketball team going to bring back this team and then change what's out around the edges of it, you've got to bring in a new coach, somebody with some real leadership, because this guy doesn't have that. These guys do not. These guys not only tune him out, they make a display of it.
Your starting lineup is coming
back.
That
last game when they shot up 53 pointers, they made a display of it. It's pathetic.
Your starting lineup is coming back next year, right? I mean, there's almost no way to get around that.
I don't know that that's the case, Jarrett. I don't. There's a lot of speculation on Kevin Durant.
Jarrett, let us drive the show. We're going to get there. We're going to get to these questions you're throwing out there. We got a path set, Jarrett. We can go through this individually, and we will. There's no doubt about it. But nobody is going to want Bradley Beal. Kevin Durant, who might you trade him to? And what might you get back in return? And what might you look like then? And then the idea of trading Devin Booker. You can't actively trade Devin Booker. But as Vinny and I have talked about, hopefully the Olympics are going to be enough of a distraction where Devin Booker doesn't go, I am out of here. I have given this franchise too much, and I am looking at this rabbit hole right now. Done. D-U-N.
I mean,
done.
What if you're of the, and look, there's people that have turned on Devin Booker too. There's people that say he needs to go. And maybe that's an emotional reaction to what's a disappointing season. If you're of the mindset that Devin Booker can't go anywhere, that he is the linchpin to all of us, and I still believe that to be the case,
mm-hmm.
you're probably encouraged by the fact that in an elimination game, He was remarkable last night. That dude played his butt off last night.
Butt time.
And it wasn't enough. But the fact that he's gone through the muck and the mire of this franchise now for 9 years, the highs and the lows, maybe he's just built to be here forever.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Maybe. That's a rare cat, though. Yeah. But this thing is now circled back to the very beginning of it all. Brutal!
Suns out in a sweep at the hands of the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll have a lot of Suns talk the rest of today, including your thoughts on some open phone time on a couple of different occasions. But the D-backs had a very quiet weekend on Friday and Saturday in Seattle. They got it going a little bit yesterday. Salvaged a win. We'll relive it in D-backs Daily. It's Bickley and Marotta mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports. The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball.
D-backs Daily.
D-backs try to salvage one of their three games in Seattle after being completely shut down on Friday and Saturday, and they'd go at it with Brandon Pfaadt on the mound against Seattle right-hander Logan Gilbert. D-backs went down quietly in the first inning with Gilbert retiring the side in order and striking out both Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Ketel Marte. In the bottom of the first, it would not take long for the M's to get on the board, courtesy of former Diamondback Josh Rojas.
The 1-0 pitch is swung on. That's hit to deep right field. McCarthy turning, looking, and it's gone. Another leadoff homer for Rojas in this series. Just like that, 1-0 Seattle.
And the second pitch of the game, 1-0. Pfaadt recovered. He got the heart of the Seattle order out, including strikeouts of Jorge Polanco and Ty France. Top of the second, D-backs had Christian Walker leading things off.
The 2-2 pitch, swung on. That's barreled deep to left field. Thank you very much. We are tied at one. Bank shot off of the LED scoreboard in left center, and Walker gets his fifth of the year to tie this thing in the second.
Yeah, Walker destroyed the four-seam fastball 422 feet to tie the game at one apiece. That score would stick until the bottom of the third. Leonardo Rivas led off the inning with a triple in his first major league at-bat. And in case you're wondering, yes, he is the first Leonardo to play in the major leagues. Next hitter, Rojas, reached on catcher's interference. That brought up Julio Rodriguez.
Now the 0-1. Swing and a jam shot into shallow center field. Carroll racing, can't reach it. It's down for a hit. Coming home to score is Rivas. And it's 2-1 Seattle.
Yeah, Mariners back in front. They loaded the bases when Polanco... They gave him a single on the play. It was a bouncing ball to third. Suarez fielded it, wanted to go to second for a double play, but Marte wasn't at the bag, so
right.
Suarez had to go to first. He beat out the throw, and Pfaadt is in a major, major
I agree
spot.
With you, but who do you give the arrow to on that play?
They could have called it a fielder's choice.
Yeah, that's what they should have. You're right. That's what they should have done. You're right.
Yeah, so Pfaadt, he's in a major spot. Bases loaded, nobody out, but got some help in the form of defense.
2-1 Mariners, and Pfaadt really in a jam. From the belt, the right-hander's 0-1. Sweeper hit into shallow left field. Gurriel racing in, makes a sliding catch. Rojas wasn't tagging, and he won't be able to score. 2-2 pitch is on the way. Swinging a ground ball to third. Suarez gloves, throws to second for one, throw to first. That is in time, and that is an inning-ending double play. Big-time escape from Pfaadt to keep the deficit at just one.
Yeah, that was a huge turn of events in the third inning there. We'd stay at 2-1 Seattle for a while, until the top of the seventh, actually. Jock Peterson delivered a one-out double, and that brought up the former Mariner, Gino Suarez, to the plate.
From the stretch, he throws. Swing, this one drilled. Deep to left field, Clase, it's over his head and it's off the wall. Peterson's going to score. Suarez into second with a game-tying double, and it's two aside with one out in the seventh.
Yeah, 2-2, D-backs could not tack on. Mariners could do nothing against Pfaadt. He retired the last 11 batters he faced, including striking out the side in the sixth, before he handed things off to Joe Manta playing the seventh. Still tied at two in the top of the eighth. Trent Thornton on in relief for Seattle. Kevin Newman draw a walk to lead off. then moved to second on a sack fly by Jake McCarthy. Gurriel flied out for the second out of the inning. But then, Ketel Marte stepped up.
Here's the pitch. He swings, drills it to deep right. Haniger going back. It's over his head. It's off the wall. Diamondbacks are going to take the lead as Ketel delivers a two-out RBI double. And it's 3-2 Diamondbacks.
Yeah, the ever-solid Ryan Thompson got the Mariners in order in the eighth, still leading 3-2. They bring in the Gink!
The Gink!
To nail it down, and he did so in very workmanlike fashion.
And now the 0-1. Swing and a high fly ball into left field. Gurriel is underneath it, and he will make the catch to secure a 3-2 victory. The Diamondbacks win the final game of a grueling road trip and will fly home happy to Phoenix now that the victory is secured. Yeah,
4-6 on that trip in the 10 games, three cities. Torey Lovello, after getting that win yesterday, gave credit where credit was due.
Really, for me, it started with Brandon Fott, right? I think it was 11 strikeouts, six really strong innings, and then the bullpen took it over from there. And that's the reason why we were in the position we were in to win this game. Credit to Brandon, who continued to make pitches. The pitch count was climbing, but not rapidly, and that's why he gave us six innings. It was just a great effort by him.
Yeah, it was. Fott was great. The bullpen was great. They needed this win in the worst way, Vic. But let's focus on the offense, or lack thereof. This road trip especially really, really spotlighted what's going on with this offense.
Mm-hmm.
In two of the games on this trip, they combined for 31 runs. In the other eight games, they combined for 17.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're like a boom or bust offense.
There was nothing going on offensively in Seattle for the most part.
No.
I mean, they scratched out that win yesterday, but poof.
Can I point out that Corbin Carroll has the second lowest slugging percentage in the entire National League and has five RBI in 27 games.
I'm wondering, I wanted to go there with Derek Hall last week. I didn't go there because I didn't want to sound the alarms, but another bad weekend for Corbin Carroll offensively. Now he's
in his hometown state. Now that used to be a big deal for him.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll continue.
That's where he went, and we made such a big deal about him playing in the All-Star game at T-Mobile Park last year. But is the clock ticking on Corbin Carroll getting a plane
down
ticket to Reno?
Yeah, listen,
he's hitting 189.
He's hitting eighth in the lineup.
189, one home run over 122 plate appearances. This is a guy that was the rookie of the year and, if I have to remind you, finished fifth in the MVP voting. Fifth!
Yes.
And nobody saw this coming.
Well,
this is one of those cautionary tales again. Oh, this contract they signed him to is the greatest thing ever.
The greatest Diamondback of all time. Literally, people were saying that last year.
Luis Gonzalez said it this spring. And I'm not saying he's wrong.
Uh-huh.
It just doesn't look that great right now. And I had people, you know, sending me on social media the splits since after that, I think it was July 6th. When Corbin Carroll, for the second time, took a swing last summer and popped his shoulder, and everybody's like, uh-oh, it's going to be over. And he came back and he played, but the splits since then are eye-popping.
Yeah, and listen, the thing that's really alarming about this is it's not, you look at his metrics, he's not swinging and missing a ton, he's not striking out, he's getting his walks, but he's having zero impact, because he's not barreling up the ball. His contact rate or whatever is terrible.
Here's a stat that I came across over the weekend, and this was at the beginning of the weekend. His above average exit velocity and hard hit rate from 2023 have fallen significantly this season. At the time, Carroll had a 202 average, a 253 slugging percentage, and just one home run. Carroll's 83.8 mile per hour average exit velocity is in the third percentile in Major League Baseball, and only 24.7% of his 81 batted balls have been hit hard.
Mm.
This is all very concerning stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if the accolades that were achieved last year for Corbin Carroll in a dream rookie season is making it difficult for the Diamondbacks to make a difficult choice.
I think there's probably a lot of that. I hope that he's healthy. We know that he had a couple of those weird shoulder deals last year.
Yes, but didn't miss any time with either one of those.
Right, but in real time, we were like, what is going on here? I don't know. You talk about a mystery. This is an all-timer.
You know what he needs? He needs Glenn Close to show up in a white dress and a big hat and be backlit at a stadium.
There you go. Right?
Break the clock at Wrigley Field and all is good.
Yeah. So I think that with all that in mind, the idea of just treading water is what this baseball team, very modest goals at the moment. And a couple of bits of good news. Number one, Zach Gallen is back to throwing. I think we were worried about that.
Oh, my goodness. That was just another. Friday night when that news comes by. What else can go wrong?
Totally.
So they dodged a bullet there.
Exactly.
Scheduled to make his next start, which is good. But hey, the Dodgers are coming to town starting tonight. 6:40 first pitch, 6 o'clock pregame. Last chance to win a Marvin Harrison Jr. jersey, if and when they become available, and an autographed Kyler Murray jersey. Just text jersey to 620-620 for your chance to win. That's jersey to 620-620. Coming up next, speaking of those Arizona Cardinals, busy weekend for Monty Austin Fort. 12 new players in the fold via the draft. We'll get into all of it next. It's Pickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Wolf. The 2024 NFL Draft is in the books. So how much better will this year's draft class make the Arizona Cardinals? We'll be reacting at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
I think, unfortunately, can we talk again in 2 years? I think eventually, like, it's crazy to say, but when our scouts grade, we always grade what's this player going to be in by year two. And so, that goes into the transition that I talked about from college to the NFL. That first year, that's a huge jump for these guys. It's a mental change. It's a physical change. They got to learn how we do things. They got to learn our scheme. And it's a lot. It is a lot for them guys to go through. So, we will get those guys in here. We'll get them onboarded as soon as we can in a couple weeks. I'm excited to get them going. These guys have already reaching out to their coaches saying, hey, when can I get there? It's like, you got to slow down here. Like, there's rules. We can't rush you in here right now. So, we'll get them going, but we're excited to get them here. But our expectation for them, all of them, is to come in here, work, carve out a role, find a way to help us win.
It's Monty Austin Fort in the aftermath of a busy weekend for the Cardinals. 12 draft picks. That's kind of a historic number of draft picks.
Oh, listen, if they all made the team, it's nearly a fourth of your roster.
Yeah, so, the stated goal or the unstated goal is to find some starters in the draft. Mm-hmm. I think the Cardinals definitely did that. 6 on offense, 6 on defense. They checked the boxes of areas of need, certainly with the Marvin Harrison Jr. pick. They drafted another wide receiver. There was a couple things that I think overall had some people scratching their heads.
Running back pick?
Well, let's start with Friday night.
Okay.
We went into it. We left the show on Friday. Hey, Cardinals got to get a cornerback with their second pick, right? Mm-hmm. 35th overall. They decided to trade down from 35. They trade all the way down to 43 because there was so many. At 35, they trade with Atlanta. There's a lot of cornerbacks on the board. Some good names, a lot of names that were projected to be first-round picks.
Yeah.
So they trade down to 43, and then right before they pick, there's a run on cornerbacks. Philadelphia goes Cooper DeJean, 40, out of Iowa. New Orleans takes Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama at 41. Then Houston takes Kamari Lassiter, the cornerback, out of Georgia at 42. Mm. And you're like, oh, no, did this backfire? They still went cornerback at 43. Max Melton, a cornerback from Rutgers, who in reading up on him, pretty impressive resume. He got some praise from Marvin Harrison Jr. Yeah. Hey, I always respected his game going up against him in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. But could they have had a better cornerback? Maybe they had Melton higher. I don't know. Maybe they knew that that was going to shake down. But the way we viewed it from the outside was, wow, that was a bit of a curious move.
Right. Yes, listen. So if you were going to quibble, and again, nobody seems to be quibbling with anything Monty Austin Fort does. It's amazing. If he trades down and gets an extra pick, I saw this happen in real time. People are like, oh, he's the greatest. Here's the thing that I wonder about. So you get Marvin Harrison Jr. at 4, and now you've got your stud wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there at 27 with a cachet of third-round picks. There was any number of ways you could have gone at that point in time, and what they decided to do was get in on the back end of the edge rushers and then move out of that 35th pick when there are a lot of good cornerbacks there. Now, if Max Melton turns out to be that dude, and people have taken a lot of solace in the fact that Max Melton had a really good game checking Marvin Harrison Jr., okay, and there's a couple of draft experts who call Max Melton their sleeper. Heads up for everybody. You can always find somebody who raves about somebody you draft, okay?
Absolutely. Especially that high in the draft.
So that's what I'm going to be looking at. I'm going to be looking at Darius Robinson, Max Melton, the kind of players they become relative to what the general manager could have done in that vicinity with those third-round picks.
Yes. Monty Austin Ford was asked afterwards, hey, did you get nervous when there was a run on corners before you drafted at 43 after the trade down?
The corners were flying off the board. Were you starting to freak out about not getting one?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I think, were you? yeah, no, I'm glad. I hope you calmed down once we got one. yeah, well, we got two. I mean, I think our board actually, it fell really well for us. It tends to happen. It tends to happen that way where just league-wide there's a run on a position. We see it all the time. And it happened with a couple other positions tonight. It just happened to be in that stretch of corners that it happened for us.
Yeah, so that went down. Jarrett also brought it up in the third round pick, 66th overall. This was not a good running back draft. There wasn't a lot of them taken early. But they go running back in the third round, Trey Benson out of Florida State, whom they love. They love the physicality. They love the physical makeup. Good college player.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not hating on the player. I'm wondering about the position. And Monty Austin Ford said afterwards, look, we're not drafting for position. We're drafting for value and best player available. Running back was not high, at least as I saw it, high on my on the list of needs for the Arizona Cardinals, but they go running back in the third round.
Yeah, I agree. That would surprise me as well, even more so from the tight end from Illinois they drafted, because that guy is a big-time run blocker, and clearly this is going to be the core identity of the team.
Yes.
Physical and running the football. So maybe if you kind of fold Trey Benson into that, it makes a little more sense, but I'm with you. That was another one where I'm like, wow.
Yeah, here was...
Wasn't expecting that.
Here was Jonathan Gannon on what Benson adds to the running back room.
From my standpoint, playmaking, speed, versatility, power. He's a big man that runs really fast. And that's always, when I look at it, can you break tackles? Yeah. Can you make people miss in space? Yeah. Can you hit home runs? Yes. So I love the addition there.
Yeah, they drafted also in the third round an offensive lineman from Illinois, Isaiah Adams, who played tackle at Illinois. He's projected to move inside, maybe be a starter right away. Interesting path from Canada to get to Illinois. Played a ton of college football at a bunch of spots. That was the theme, too. This draft class, they played a ton of college football.
Yeah, experienced.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a definite attribute.
You mentioned Tip Ryman, the third round pick out of Illinois. Run blocker, but they're raving about his athletic ability, that he could turn into a pass-catching threat as well.
Football hotbed, Illinois.
They got another corner, Elijah Jones from Boston College in the third round. They drafted the safety, Taylor Demerson from Texas Tech. Xavier Thomas, a fifth-round pick, the edge rusher out of Clemson. He was one of the top recruits in his high school class coming out. And, had a little bit of a circuitous route at Clemson to get to this point. But there's a lot of people pinpointing him as maybe a guy that can really shine at the next level. I'll say this. And again, how we feel about on this show about draft grades after the draft is over. And Monty Austin Ford even joked and said, let's talk down the road. Mel Kiper Jr. gave out two A grades. Four teams in the draft, and the Arizona Cardinals
got one of them. Yeah. Okay, good.
So take
solace in that. Yeah, no. I think this draft class is good, but again, I think to start raving about it as an all timer, I think it's a little premature. I mean, it's
all going to come down to what their second and third picks do, because we all expect Marvin Harrison to be a star, and that was a no brainer,
right?
But it's the Robinson and Max Melton picks.
I tend to agree with that.
Yeah. I would agree with that, too. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line. It's open at 620-620 right now. Coming up next.
Let's get into it.
The final Vinny's view of the 2023-2024 season as it pertains to your Phoenix Suns. Spickley Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.